Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. We are looking at the story of Samson here on Searchlight. So far, we've discovered that Samson is a he-man with a she weakness, and this weakness for women is about to get him in trouble. As we left off on our last program in Judges chapter 14, Samson was down in Philistine country getting a wife. And during the celebration, he posed a riddle to 30 men. Unbeknownst to Samson, the Philistines were pressuring Samson's new Philistine wife to find out the answer to the riddle for them. Let's now join Pastor John and see what happens and what we can learn from the actions of Samson.
Verse 16, what does she do? She wept before him and said, "You don't love me, you hate me. You have put a riddle to the people of my country, and you haven't told me the answer." And he said, "Behold, I haven't even told my dad or my mom. Why should I tell you, woman?" Well, she, verse 17, wept before him the rest of the 7 days, the 4 days that were following this encounter with those angry groomsmen. It came to pass on the seventh day that he finally just, okay, quit your blubber and I'll tell you. I mean, man, guys, you understand this. I mean, I'll tell you. What are you, okay, see, because she was crying. So he gives her the answer, and she then, verse 17, tells the people, the groomsmen. Well, the men of the city said to Samson on the seventh day, when the contest is now up and he thinks he's got him stumped, he doesn't know what his wife has done. And they said, "What is sweeter than honey? And what is stronger than a lion?" "What? We figured it out ourselves? You're lying. And you know it. And he's angry. And he's not sweet, believe you me. He's bitter about this. What?" And then he says this classic line, "If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have found out my riddle. You were plowing with my cow." That's what he's calling his bride here. "You're plowing with my heifer. If you weren't plowing with my heifer, you would have never found out the answer to this riddle." He's a real romantic, you know. You know, he's having a cow here, literally. He's upset. He's ticked off. He's angry. "You have been messing with my lady. You," and he's upset. "And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him." And again, that's that phrase that pops up over and over, the source of his strength. "And he went down to Ashkelon," okay? And he has the Spirit of God come upon him, and he makes his way down to Ashkelon, one of the Philistine cities in that region, the Gaza Strip today. "And he slew 30 men, Philistine men. He cracked their skulls and he took their clothes and he brought them back." You know, here's your 30 shirts and here's your 30 suits. He got them off of 30 dead Philistines, you know. I wonder how clean those shirts were. I bet they were a bit soiled and a bit bloodied. But be that as it may, he says, "Here's your clothes, guys. You want 30 shirts and 30 suits? Well, here they are. Off 30 dead countrymen as he cracked their skulls and took their clothes." His anger was kindled. And he went home to his father's house. I'm ticked off. He's upset. He's not going back to pick up his bride. He's going back home to his dad's house again. So Samson's wife, that is the woman that he was supposed to marry, this filly from Timnath, was given then, since they were having this wedding anyway, the dad gave her to one of the groomsmen. And this, you know, "I'm not going to waste all the party stuff and the party favors and the decorations and the cake and whatever. So, daughter, marry him instead. So he gives her to another, you see, right then. Samson didn't know this. He's back home. First he's upset, and now he's cooled off, and he begins to think about his lady, his wife. He hasn't yet been with her in that way, and so he begins to think of her that day, and I have a wife down there. I'm going to go make a visit to her. It came to pass within a while after, in the time of the wheat harvest, which would be about June or so, Samson visited his wife with a kid, that is a goat. He was going to go see the old heifer, and he brought her a goat. A real romantic guy here. Here, old heifer, brought you this goat. Actually, the goat, he's going to have some shish kebab. It's kind of a nice thing, really. He was going to do some barbecuing with her. I'm going to bring her this kid, this goat, and do some shish kebabbing. And then I will go into my wife, into the chamber. So he gets there. But verse 1, last phrase, says her father would not allow him to go in. Samson, don't go in her room. Don't go in there. Her father said, I thought that you had given up on her, that you hated her. So I gave her to your friend. But is not her younger sister prettier than she? Take her instead of the other daughter. So this dad says, you can have my younger daughter, and she's prettier anyway. Take her. You know, Samson, though, felt as though he had been ripped off and that he was wronged. And Samson was upset. Now, he says, shall I be more blameless than the Philistines, though I do them a displeasure? He went and he caught 300 foxes or jackals. Foxes tend to move in solitude. Jackals move in packs. The word here for fox or jackal could be either one. Probably Samson gathered jackals together. He gets 300 jackals. I mean, this guy, you know, he's running around the fields and gathering these jackals. And he took firebrands or torches and turned tail to tail or tied the tails together. And he put a firebrand in the midst of the two tails. And when he had set the brands on fire, the torch that's there between the two tails that are tied together of these two jackals, 150 teams of these jackals in totality. Why not just one jackal for a torch? Why two? Because they're going to go crazy. They're going to go all over the field. If it's just one, he would head straight back to his den. This way, two, they're going to go back and forth and zig and zag, and the fire's going to spread all over the Philistine fields, you see. So that's what happened. The Philistine fields went up in flames. The Philistines said, verse 6, who's done this? And they said, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he had taken his wife, that is, the Timnite took his wife and gave her to his companion. Well, the Philistines, verse 6, last phrase, then came up and burnt her and her father with fire. Now think this through. She said, oh no, when these guys said, we're going to burn you and your father and your house if you don't betray your husband. And she made a decision. I'm going to betray my husband. I'm going to cry and get the answer to his riddle. I'm going to betray him in the process, but it's going to allow me to protect my father and my house, my family. It's never right to do wrong to do right. She betrayed her husband, see. She thought, yeah, but I'm doing it for a good reason. I know it's wrong to betray my husband, but I'm doing it for a good reason. Guess what happens? She gets burned anyway. And so too her family. And not just her and the family, but the whole country is now going up in flames. There's a lesson there for me. There's a lesson there for you too. And that is, it's never right to do wrong to do right. And you can often justify, or I can justify something saying, well, I know this is wrong, but it's for a good end, you see. Problem was, in her case, when she betrayed her husband as she ought not to have done, she ends up losing and getting burned anyway, to an even greater degree, actually. So now she's burned, she's dead. The country is going up in flames. And Samson said, though you have done this, yet will I be avenged of you. After that, I will cease. Because you now have killed my wife and her family, now I'm really ticked. So he smote them hip and thigh. What does that mean? Well, we would say, man, they were black and blue. You know, from top to bottom, if you would. He spanked them, we might say today. He smote them hip and thigh. Samson said, because you guys burned my wife and burned her family, hey, I'm really upset now. And he smites them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. So now Philistines are just falling everywhere. He then goes and dwells in the top of the rock Edom. After he wipes out these Philistines, he heads for the hill country, if you would. He goes to the top of a rock to flake out, to kick back, to wait and see what's going to happen next. Well, the Philistines, now they realize Samson has killed a bunch of our guys. He's burned our fields. We got to get this dude. So they went up and they pitched, verse 9, in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. And the men of Judah said, hey, why are you guys here? Why are you guys bothering us? And the Philistines said, it's not you that we're wanting. We come to arrest Samson, to take him away, to do to him even as he's done to us. We're not wanting to get in a fight with you guys, you men of Judah, but Samson, who's hanging out among you, hey, he's the guy that we want access to. We want to apprehend. So, verse 11, 3,000 Israelites, men of Judah, go to this place, this rock Etam, where Samson is hanging. And they said to Samson, knowest thou not the Philistines are rulers over us? What is it that you have done to us? Don't you know the Philistines dominate us? And now you made them mad, Samson. And he said, hey, as they did to me, so I have done to them. This is Samson's golden rule, you see. Or should I say his stony rule. As they did to me, I'm doing to them. Jesus said, as you want others to do to you, do to them. Samson didn't think that way. Oh, he's an enigma, isn't he? The Spirit of God comes upon him, and great victories are wrought through him, and yet there's something very wrong within him. Yeah, I'm going to get them back. They burned me, so I burned them. They bruised me emotionally, so I bruised them physically. Samson says that to these 3,000 countrymen of his, men of Judah. What are you doing, Samson? Here's what I'm doing. I'm getting them back for the way they treated me, you see. And they said, verse 12, listen, we are come down, Samson, here to bind you, that we could deliver you over to the Philistines. And Samson says, promise me that you will not attack me yourselves. No, we will not attack you, but we'll bind you with ropes, and we won't kill you. So they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. Okay, guys, if you're here to arrest me, you 3,000 countrymen, I'll let you. Just promise me that you won't turn on me, that you won't try to kill me. No, we won't. We're just going to bind you up and turn you over. Okay. By the way, it's interesting to me that this is the only time that the Israelites mustered an army to do what? To capture one of their own men. Interesting. They never mustered an army to go to war against the enemy. But they had 3,000 men of Judah to do what? To take the one guy that was giving them some victories and to bind him, to arrest him. It's the way that it can be amongst us, sad to say, sometimes. May it not be. Man, we got to remember always who the enemy really is. Too often we're fighting against each other. We're fighting against people that are perhaps not looking at things precisely the way that we do doctrinally or theologically, but we're all part of the same country. And so much energy is wasted fighting or arresting or exposing or whatever it might be, other Christians, denominations, whatever it might be. This is a sad, sad story here to me, because the men of Judah finally mobilized, not to war against the enemy, the Philistines, But hey, let's get our leader. Let's bind Samson up and turn him over, you see. So he says, okay. He has a plan. Just like Jesus, when they came to bind him, Jesus allowed those soldiers, when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, they bound him with a rope. Jesus could have just spoke the word and been set free, but he allowed himself to be bound too. But Jesus said, but don't harm these, my disciples. Let them go. That night that he was bound and carried away from Gethsemane to be led to his trial that would ultimately culminate in his being crucified on the cross of Calvary. And Samson here has that same kind of mentality. He doesn't want these 3,000 men hurt. He's got a plan. I'll let you bind me, because he's actually going to deliver them, as we shall see. So he's bound now, and these guys think that they have him secure in their ropes. And when he came to Lehi, the Philistine shouted against him, verse 14, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon Samson, and the cords, the ropes that were on his arms became as flax that was burnt with fire. Man, it became like twine or string. And he popped them off his hands. Boom, boom, he snapped those bands. And then he found a new jawbone of an ass. Boom, boom, he pops these ropes right off. The 3,000 there are watching. And Samson looks around. The Philistines that he's going to battle against have the most sophisticated weaponry in all of that region of the world. What does Samson use? He grabs the jawbone of a donkey. Because see, God uses the foolish things to confound the wise and the weak to show up the strong. I mean, remember earlier in the third chapter, Shamgar took on 600 Philistines with a stick, an ox goad. David's going to take on the biggest Philistine of all, Goliath, with a slingshot. See, that's the thing. The battles that we fight, it's not saying what new technology can we develop or who can we hire or what. That's not really it. Ultimately, it's the Spirit of God. And you can just use the jawbone of an ass, see, or an ox goad, a stick, or a little sling and a small little pebble. The Philistines were beat up by an ox goad, by the jawbone of a donkey, by a little boy's sling and stone. God is saying, it's not by might nor by power, but by my Spirit. And in the battles that we're going through now, personally or as a church or whatever it might be, it's not going to be clever strategy primarily. It's not going to be manipulating systems politically. It's going to be the Spirit of God ultimately. Bottom line, so what should we do? We are people of prayer. Because who receives the Spirit? Jesus said to you and me, if you being evil know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will the Heavenly Father give the Holy Spirit to them that ask? Ask. See. So whether it's your own personal battle or what we're going through as a church right now, the key is God can use the jawbone of an ass. God can use the stick that's in your hand. God can use a little stone. And the Philistines will say, ha, 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 that's nothing. But with the Spirit of God, it becomes something. Do you know that? So here he looks around. He sees this jawbone of a donkey. And he grabs it and he slew 1,000 men therewith. Now that's incredible. Here's Sammy picking up this jawbone, banging away that day. 1,000 Philistines are dead. And the 3,000 Israelites are watching. They're watching this champion at work. And Samson said, with the jawbone of an ass, heaps upon heaps, with the jaw of an ass have I slain 1,000 men. And it came to pass, when he made an end of speaking, he cast away the jawbone out of his hand, and he called the name of that place Ramoth Lehi, or that is, the place of the lifting up of the jawbone. Now there's bodies everywhere, 1,000 Philistines. I mean, the guy is a whirling dervish. The guy is amazing. Taking that jawbone and popping this guy and conking that one. And the Philistines are falling like flies. And he looks around and they're all dead guys. 1,000 of them are dead. The rest ran off. You would too if you saw one guy with a donkey jaw, you know, wipe out 1,000 of your comrades. What's this? And they hightailed it out of there. And now Samson looks around and he says, look what I have done. I have killed 1,000 Philistines and I'm calling this place, he says, Ramoth Lehi, the lifting up of the jawbone, or Jawbone Heights. Jawbone Heights, that's what I'm going to call this place in commemoration of me. What I did, I killed 1,000 men with the jawbone of a donkey, and this is going to be Jawbone Heights to commemorate and celebrate my great victory. Then, verse 18, he was thirsty. This is so great. 1,000 men are dead. I have done this. And then he was very thirsty, and he looked around, and there was nothing to drink. His mouth is dry and his lips are parched and his throat is constricting. I mean, killing 1,000 Philistines is not, you know, an easy thing. And he's thirsty and he's dying of thirst, literally. And he calls on the Lord, thou hast given this great deliverance into the hand of thy servant. What did he say in verse 16? I have slain. Now he says, God has ways of tempering our triumphs with trials. He was so proud, Jawbone Heights, look what I've done. And God says, okay, can you get a drink for yourself? Can you satisfy your own thirst? No, I'm thirsty. Come on, big guy. You're so great. Take care of your thirst. I can't do that. He called, Lord, this is a victory that you did. This was your victory, and now I'm thirsty. See, a triumph? Good. Let's temper it with a trial. Triumphs need to be tempered with trials, because if triumphs aren't tempered with trials, they become points of pride. And so, I'm going to die. Lord, it's your victory. Shall I now die for thirst? He says in verse 18. And God is so good. This next verse, I love it. Oh, God didn't say, die, Samson, you proud, pompous person. You know, just die. God says, okay. And he clave a hollow place out of the jaw, and water came out. And he drank this water, and his spirit came again, and he was revived. I mean, this is the goodness of God. This is the grace of God. I would have had a tendency to say, Samson, sorry, buddy. Die, baby. But God says, okay. And he gives him water out of the jawbone of the donkey. The very instrument that he was proud of. Jawbone Heights is what I'm going to call this place. Now with humility and gratitude and desperation. Oh, Lord, thank you. But God gave him drink miraculously.
This is an interesting lesson for Samson and for us. Sometimes we too can get puffed up in pride from our triumphs. But if we are honest, we would have to admit that it is really God that gives us the victory, and He will keep doing so as long as we remain dependent upon Him. He is a good and gracious God. This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com.
We all go through challenging times in our lives, but we are not alone in these times. We have a faithful and loving God who walks with us day by day. To help us explore the faithfulness of God in these difficult times, Pastor John has made a book available called A Future and a Hope. In this book, John shares some of his personal experiences in dealing with tragedies, including the death of his young wife, and later, the death of his 16-year-old daughter. As John relates his own stories, we see a God who is faithful and compassionate at all times. A future and hope is especially comforting for those who are currently experiencing tragedy or loss in their life. If you would like this book for yourself or someone you know, you can order it from our website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.